Marshall Masters is my guest tonight on Ground Zero. Talking about Planet X, a new article in the Washington Post has prompted this. And this is something that we want to just touch base on and find out the truth behind it. Let's go to David in Texas. Hi, David. You're on with Marshall Masters. Go ahead.
Hi, Clyde. How's it going, sir?
Good.
Hey, I missed part of your show, but I talked to your screener, and it looked like you hadn't covered this, but is this the same Marshall Masters that wrote the introduction to the Colburn Bible?
Yes, I published the Colburn.
Yeah. Okay, that's just, I knew I'd heard your name somewhere, and then I thought about this this book, and then just ironically enough, I opened it up, and your name was in the front of it. My question is, the Destroyer, is even though you guys are kind of talking like this is a planet, could this be a comet or some kind of heavenly body that gets too close to us and causes what's being described in this book?
Well, what the book is describing, what the Colburn describes, it has a very accurate history. And this was penned by the ancient Egyptians at about the same time Moses was leading the Jews through the Sinai. And what the Egyptians were really trying to do is figure out how this scrappy little Jew would beat their pantheon of gods. And so it was their 9/11 report, so to speak. And they were pulling a lot of stuff, but they actually did a brilliant job of documenting the flyby of the Planet X system at that time. And what they and when they do it, there's nothing equivocal about it. I mean, it's just man on the street brutal. And one of the things that I found impressive that they said, this is going to scare us so much that women will become infertile and men are going to become impotent. And think about the fact that at that time, people didn't live that far beyond their 30s. Okay. So what you're really doing is scaring the sex out of a teenager. And yeah, it's funny. It's hard to imagine, right?
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
And especially in our PBA world, right?
Sure.
But it really did. And it just terrified these people. And they also, the ancient Egyptians gave prophetic signs of when it would return. And they actually predicted radical Islam. One of the passages, manuscripts 3:8, says, a faith that professes peace will bring war to the four corners of the earth.
Now that's amazing there. It's interesting how that was that prophetic in that sense. David, we're out of time, but thank you so much for your question. And Marshall, thank you for being on the program tonight. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of serious talk. This is probably one of the best times I've ever had talking about Planet X, and it's very informative. Thank you so much. Where can we go to hear more from you and see more?
YOWUSA.com or MarshallMasters.com. Everything's right there. And we have a current article with our signs that it's going to summarize for you.
That'll
what we
fantastic.
See is the major signs, and also my videos on our recent observation images and the analysis.
Fantastic, Marshall. Have a good night. And good night. Oh, actually, we're going more. We have 2 more hours, don't we? 2 more hours of Ground Zero. Stay tuned. I know for some people, the story of Planet X may be a little bit too much to think about. But I think that what's interesting is there seem to be a number of names and theories and ideas that all tend to point to the possibility of some returning extraterrestrial entity, body, or maybe even near-Earth object, somehow pointing to the idea of catastrophism as the end result of all of us. Now, we believe in a second coming. Christians do. We believe in a number of things. But the catastrophe aspect, and I was talking about Nibiru catastrophe, that's something that has always been wired into us. And it's probably because in the beginning, where all things were talked about in the biblical sense, I mean from the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the deep. The earth was without form and void. It was quite basically chaotic. And it took an intelligence, a remarkable intelligence, to piece together that which was torn apart. And much of what you hear about with Nibiru, much of what you hear about when you're listening to this type of analysis is that we have stories. If you read Zachariah Sitchin and several others who have, they've taken his research and they've corrected it or they've otherwise expanded upon it. You hear literally the creation and destruction story all in one. As Marshall Masters was talking about the idea that you can read an Exodus, the idea of a system crossing over, or you can hear about the bearded stars or the comets, or many of the metaphors we have today are all based primarily on these actions in space, actions from the sky. And literally, when the ancients saw activity in the sky, it frightened them. It frightened them, and it created a reason to put their faith towards a deity, put their faith towards a god. There was another theory that has not been shared. I don't think a lot of talk show hosts share this, especially ones in this realm, like, for example, George or Art or any of the others. I don't know if there's anyone else who would touch this, but there was also something called the oligarch theory of planet formation. And what this was about is there were hundreds of planet-sized objects. According to this oligarch theory, in the beginning, there were hundreds of planet objects known as oligarchs. And this was in the early stages of the solar system's evolution. There was an astronomer named Eugene Chang, and it was very recent, that this astronomer had speculated that although some of these oligarchs became the planets we know today, most of them were flung outward by gravitational interactions, and some may have escaped the solar system altogether to become what are called free-floating planets, whereas others would be orbiting in a halo around the solar system with orbital periods of millions of years. And this halo would lie between 1,000 or 10,000 AU from the sun, or between a third and a 13th distance to the Oort cloud. Now, one of the words you don't hear much, you hear of Wormwood, you hear of Planet X, Nibiru, but Hercolibus. Hercolibus is something that is a giant planet that supposedly was said to approach the Earth with catastrophic results similar to Nibiru or Planet X. There was a author from Colombia, named, his name was Rebolu. He called himself Rebolu, and he had spoken many times about this, and of course, it's been written off as pseudoscience, but he basically goes on to say, well, when it approached before, it wiped out Atlantis, and the flood was caused by Hercolibus, just like what was said, Marshall was saying, that he said it was Planet X. This guy said it was this big red planet called Hercolibus. And it caused volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, a pole shift. It was supposed to cause a deadly epidemic. A deadly epidemic that antibiotics couldn't eliminate. The only escape was the elimination of psychological defects, astral projection, New Age nonsense. Well, all of this has been, another story that continues to become exponentially told. More and more people are telling it that this is how the world ends. This is how the apocalypse begins. This is what we're seeing transpire. A planet, an extraterrestrial body, entity, or whatever, returning and destroying us. It seems to me that we have these same metaphors that are going to be utilized in the opening of Childhood's End, which is premiering on the Sci-Fi Channel. And yes, it will be in Star Wars as well. And I'm not giving away any spoilers. I'm just saying that the theme of an order, or the theme of someone who has the knowledge of a planet or an order or a group of individuals that are hell-bent on destroying the very force that keeps us together, is a metaphor that is running, and it will be running for a while now because of the Star Wars films are going to be coming out, or the Star Wars film that's going to be coming out. And the idea of leaving this planet, leaving the cradle of life to start life elsewhere, like with the Martian, and you're hearing what Elon Musk is saying, we must leave the planet before it's destroyed. So there seems to be, quote, a disturbance in the force that says that something is going to happen here on this planet, and we have to save the many things that we hold precious and dear because of religious extremism. And he's pointing to the idea of Islam being the religious. You heard Marshall Masters talk about the same thing, where predicted in the Colburn, saying that some evil type of radicalized religious group is going to come and they will attempt to destroy the planet. Much of the Sumerian and the other groups that talk about the winged planet are where Iraq once was. We're seeing all this come together again, and it all seems to be coming together in uniform. It all seems to come together in some strange causal reality, and we're like the acausal beings that are witnessing it, and we feel like there's nothing we can do to change it. And really, there isn't. Because I find it interesting, and every day I think to myself, you know, every day that I wake up and breathe, it's a gift. And the fact that we have gone this long without some great upheaval or disruption is also remarkable. We went through a lot of great pains, disaster, and catastrophe in the 1940s with the war. World War I, World War II. Now people are saying we're on the brink of World War III. But will World War III be as devastating as we think? And if we are lucky, we'll be passing through the solar system without any incident. But I think we're pushing our luck. We're pushing our luck to think that there will be nothing coming down from the sky that will not disrupt civilization in some way. Not that it will kill millions of people. Maybe it will. Who knows? All I'm saying is there something greater, something that will take us by surprise, much like what happened in Chelyabinsk. I think Chelyabinsk was the first shot, the first warning. But what Marshall didn't say, and what I did know, is that apparently November was the highest reported fireball sightings on record. We see many fireballs were seen, some of them causing sonic booms, some of them brighter than the sun appearing over areas. And also, it was a record year for space junk, UFOs, and of course, we heard about those big spheres that fell out of the sky in Spain. And no one is able to tell us what they are. They may have fallen off a spacecraft. They didn't say anything about these things. They were hoping that we would forget about them. Well, these are things that if you put them in the back of your mind, and then you start talking about Planet X, and now they're starting to report that there is these planets that may make the cut, that they are out there, that they may be sweeping things toward us, you have to pay attention. Because many of these things that they report coming at us are reported the last minute. They come from behind the sun, we don't see them, or they come from behind the planet at such a force that we don't realize they're on a collision course with planet Earth. And so I remember when Sliding Spring was heading towards Mars, and it hit Mars, and no one said anything about it. Pieces of it may have even came close to hitting the moon, and no one said anything about it. See, we have these other planets, and we have our magnetic field, and we have a number of things that protect us. But the more we tinker with the magnetic field, the more we tinker with what's below us, the more we tinker with the atmosphere, I'm thinking we're allowing ourselves to be sitting ducks. And I think that this experimentation and everything they're doing, whether it be the geoengineering, which I have talked about on my Facebook page recently because of the strange temperatures and the strange weather that we've been seeing in various parts of the globe right now. You can say it's climate change, and it is climate change, but it's not the kind of climate change that they're talking about. It's the kind of climate change that we're seeing, and it has no explanation. It's either
too cold, and low pressure systems are 900 and some odd millibars low pressure, which you can't even find in a barometer. Or we're seeing temperatures of 75 or more and blossoms blooming in Washington, D.C. Remember, I was talking to you about Reno, Nevada. Now, Reno had a temperature of 50, and yet it was snowing. Carson City, the same. It seems that we are tinkering with these things. CERN is tinkering with these things. Atmospheric changes are happening because of experiments, whether it be with HARP or some other electromagnetic experiment that could change the electrojet in the skies. Chemtrails, all of these things. I'm getting pictures of people sending me chemtrails. It is definitely something that we need to look into, something we need to think about and ask ourselves, are we really, really contributing to our own demise? Are we nudging God? And is this going to be the result? What do you thought? Well, I want to know your thoughts on this. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Are we contributing to our own demise? Are the end days something that we're going to create? We'll be back with more. Keep it here. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
I'm Clegg Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Let's go to Harold in Texas. Hey, Harold, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing great.
Are you familiar with the AT&T logo?
Yes, I was wondering if he was going to bring that up. Go ahead, Harold. Bring it up. Tell me about it.
Okay, you know, on the band and everything, it's like a blue earth with, I guess, wireless lines on the logo.
Right.
But when they take it, to inside the store where they sell the iPhones and whatnot, the uniforms that the salespeople are wearing are not conducive to the logo you're used to when they start advertising AT&T. And their uniforms, they have a sphere, a giant sphere, and they got a smaller sphere in orange. And when y'all started talking about the Planet X, and I was wondering, are they kind of like, let us know that Planet X is there not through the main logo, but through the uniform logo? I don't know if you ever seen it.
Well, it's been theorized, Harold, and here's something that I find you very observant. I'll tell you why. Because it's been theorized that AT&T, their logo, the round sphere, is actually a representation of Nemesis. And Nemesis is another name for Planet X. What Nemesis was is it was the dark star or the black sun that is the nemesis to our sun, meaning that we once were a binary, and this is a hypothetical science idea, although a lot of people believe it, that we were once a binary star system where we had two suns. We've seen the two-sun idea in Star Wars. We've seen the two-sun idea in Arthur C. Clarke's Space Odyssey 2010, the year we made contact. It's the idea that we had a star that was the sun and a star that gave off a lesser light, and they called it a number of things, whether it be Nemesis, Lucifer. There were a number of things they called it. So the idea of having this sphere, and even though they'll tell you otherwise, the sphere is a representation of Nemesis, a representation of another, and some people even compared it to what Lucas put forth in Star Wars called the Death Star. It is the star, the darker star, that will eventually return. Have you ever heard the sun, hear the song Black Hole Sun?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
that's, yeah, basically, it's the idea of the return. It's the return of the dark sun, the return of the darker sun. And there was actually, there was a Schwarze Sonne, which was part of the Nazis. They were called the Black Sun cult. They were also within the Nazi groups. And so the idea, though, of this dark sun or this black sun that is supposed to return, that would signify the judgment day. And this is what it is. It's it's the darker sun. It's the judgment day. It connects everything and that's the end of it all. So, yeah, very observant of you, Harold. I never thought I'd talk about this, but I read somewhere where that was what it was. It was supposed to be a representation of Nemesis.
Okay. And I was just curious if you had noticed that commercial and whether the AT&T, I'm talking about the uniform logo, not necessarily the van, where they, you know, the regular logo they put out there in the public, or
right.
forefront.
Right.
It was the logo on the uniforms. They were inside the distributor, the store, I should say.
Right, and I think that maybe Harold, you should go online and research that some more, because I think you'd find that. This was a long time ago, so my memory could be kind of rusty about this. But yeah, you bring up an excellent point that logo is a representation of the Dark Sun or the Nemesis or the Second Sun. Harold, I thank you for that call. That's a great point. Yeah, I read that somewhere. I never have used it, and Harold was very observant in bringing that up, that logo is a representation of the Second Sun or Nemesis, the idea of a binary system. The sun, our sun is the bright sun, and then there's a lesser light sun. There's Planet X in the news. Washington Post say the astronomers in Chile have found two candidates for Planet X. This is making us a trinary system as opposed to a binary system. Who knows? But at the moment, there are scientists now that are trying to debunk this. However, the findings of these two planets that may be candidates for Planet X are now being peer-reviewed. And until then, it will fall under the category of pseudoscience or hypothetical planets, as it has in the past. But I'm beginning to realize that perhaps we'll be seeing the metaphor of, like, tonight, for example. It's kind of the idea of childhood's end, the idea of we stop being children in the planetary universe, we become more adults in the planetary universe, learning more about what happens to us in the future. Now, with childhood's end, it's an end that is predictable, however, very, very needed, especially in the eyes of those who are the overlords. With Star Wars, it's going to be coming out in the next, 5-6 days, you're going to be hearing about something similar to Planet X, I'm sure. And the reason why I say this is not because I'm giving away a spoiler, it's just because you see the poster of this thing, and it's very threatening, very frightening. And I'm sure it's going to be eye-popping and tremendously overwhelming to see the power that exists that is completely illustrated in metaphor for everyone to see. The idea that we are fragile, that our lives have total fragility, that, you know, we have been lucky not to meet the same fate as the dinosaurs. We have lucked out all these thousands of years. And now those who say the Planet X is coming may have something to stand on. It just all depends if it's going to be the catastrophe that everybody believes it will be. 888-673-3700. Let's go to Mike in Ohio. Thank you, Mike, for being so patient. You're on Ground Zero.
Oh, hey, Clyde. How you doing?
Good, man.
So, yeah, I actually got two parts of comment, and then I'll just ask you the question I was going to ask Marshall Masters.
Okay.
Yes, well, actually, because during the show, I actually helped bring two of my research ideas together, because I've always held Wormwood separate from Nibiru and, any type of other celestial event.
Uh-huh.
Marshall Masters started talking about volcanism. And in my research of volcanism, you know, over the past 100 years, volcanism has risen dramatically, almost like a hockey stick, like the Al Gore chart.
Uh-huh.
And but the one thing that most people don't mention is that 75% of the Earth's volcanoes are underneath the ocean. Now, volcanoes, they spew sulfur gas, but when sulfur gas mixes with water, it makes acid. And one of the biggest arguments that the climate change people make is that, you know, because of the CO2, it's causing the acidification of the oceans. Well, to get to the Wormwood thing, in connection with Nibiru, so if this passes and it's causing the earthquakes under the ocean to spew more sulfur gases, creating more acid. I believe it says in the Bible that a third of the waters will be poisoned. So I kind of made that connection tonight, and that was kind of weird. But the question I was going to ask Marshall Masters was, if he thought that the climate deal change that was reached in Paris and all these deals, you know, for the global tax, if that was really just a cover for the elite that know what's really coming, and that they're going to use this global tax to pay for their bunkers or their lifeboats or whatever. I just want to know what you thought about that.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, I would say this, yes. I mean, you know, what else would they use? We have to create a boogeyman that everybody is so afraid of that they would be willing to pay and pay and pay and pay in order to finance something that the elite. And you know, of course, they say, well, we're using it so we can distribute the wealth evenly. We want to promote resources and how we can keep a sustainable development of resources happening on this planet. And see, these are the things that most certainly are important, but they hide behind this global warming thing. They hide behind the geoengineering. They hide behind these issues, and this is what irritates me. It's not that I don't think climate change is real. Of course it's real. You're stupid to say it isn't. But the problem I have is the theory they came to using the idea that it's just fossil fuels and industrialized nation that's doing this, when what they're doing is they're actually trying to force us into being conservationists, where we should be anyway. They're forcing us into caring for the planet, which most people with common sense do anyway. It's just they want to find a way to make money and to use that money for, like you said, ways to jump off the planet, ways to save them, while we're fighting for the last crust of bread on the planet. I mean, I was on Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, and we had a discussion about this when I was in Las Vegas, and we talked about this on the show, that this is exactly what it is. It's a plan to build underground bunkers, build planetary rockets to get off the planet. You see these people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos making these rockets that are just remarkable. Why? Because they want to get off this planet. They think this planet is doomed.
Well, the thing that gets me, too, is like we actually might actually be seeing them building the materials to build the bunkers or the lifeboats or whatever they're building to protect themselves from this. Because they give China a pass. China's got, like, a pass to pollute as much as they want to. And, you know, every month or so, you see these big, giant smog warnings in China, you know, where, the smog levels are, like, 10 times, 100 times, you know, normal levels. That could be them making all this steel to line the bunkers. I mean, and we're actually watching it, but... You know, it just, I don't understand why they get a pass from the whole climate change deal, but everybody else has to follow it.
Yeah.
Unless the money is only going to be used to build a bunker.
Well, the thing is that if they're planning on doomsday scenarios and disasters, and they have either engineered it as so, or maybe we have done it. I literally doubt it, though, because, I mean, I've seen worst-case scenarios where the planet has survived, and the problem I have with also the so-called science of global warming or the science of the climate science, they never talk about resilience. They never talk about complexity theory. They think we're all doomed, and that's a doomsday scenario. So if we are actually preparing for doom, preparing for a doomsday scenario, then I would say that your theory may have merit in a lot of ways, because they don't want to die. They want to survive. And if you believe things like Alternative 3, I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was a British mockumentary on the idea of breakaway civilizations. I think you should watch it. It'll give you some ideas. But yeah, they were talking about who they would bring in, who would they put in the bunkers, what they would save for food sources, what books and literature they'd want to keep with us all and not destroy. They were going over everything because they were waiting for the destruction of the planet. And so they talked about the books we wanted to keep, the foods we wanted to keep in seed vaults, all these things because they needed to survive. And they were also talking about how certain children with certain IQs would be kept, certain leadership would be kept intact, they would go underground, or they would have other bunkers to prepare them for this destruction. So, yeah.
Well, yeah,
go ahead.
And back to climate change, too, you know, like Marsh Mathers was discussing the magnetosphere. Well, you can go and look at the U.S. government reports on the magnetosphere over the past 100 years, and it's weakened 15%. Now, it doesn't take much comparative math analysis to realize that means there's 15% more solar radiation reaching the planet Earth. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things going on. I do not discount climate change and carbon like you. I want to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want polluted air. But, you know, I used to work in D.C., and when I would bring up, you know, what I told you about the acidifications of the oceans and volcanism, they would get more mad at me for bringing that up than if I actually denied climate change. And that was one of the things that got me thinking in this other direction.
See, because the reason why, and this is what bothers me, is that you can say, and I've said this, yes, I believe in climate change, but I don't believe in the climate change that they're proposing. And that's because they've taken the word climate change and they basically new-speaked it, or they've double-speaked it like in Orwell. And you say, if you say, I don't believe in climate change, you're a moron because climate's change. That's what climatologists are for. But the idea, though, that we are responsible solely for the climate changing because of what we're doing, it's namely, you know, their whole bitch is fossil fuels. It's always been that way. And yes, okay, fossil fuels. Yes, we need to cut back on the emissions. We need to cut back on this stuff. But I don't believe that our emissions are that big of a contributor. I think that if they take a look at the military and they take a look at, you know, wars and how they cost us in resources. And until they use those as resource gobblers, I ain't going to pay attention to them because I think they're nonsense. I think that that's the whole point, is they've left out the gobbling that goes on with military and war and the resources that we expend and all of the stuff that basically makes our oceans dirty and ugly and sickening. They don't talk about that. All they talk about is how we're responsible and we need to pay. And I don't believe in that, and I think that's nonsense. And I think it's pseudoscience if they push this on us without anyone debating it. They haven't had any debate at all. And so, yeah, I shake my head and wonder why people just buy into this hook, line, and sinker, because it just means more war and more globalization, in my opinion.
Well, thank you for your time and giving me the ability to express myself.
Oh, you are amazing, Mike. Thank you, and don't be a stranger. I just loved your call in the discussion. I love it when I can just discuss things like this and ping pong. It's fun. I just enjoy this. Thank you so much.
All right, have a nice evening.
You too. Take care. Mike's great. It was a great call. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. More to come. Keep it right here. A listener by the name of Leander just drawed my attention to something, and I knew about this. I don't even know why I didn't bring it up, but my memory was refreshed. David Bowie is coming out with a new album in January, next month. I think it's going to be released January 8th, but he put out a video that's creepy as hell, showing a dead astronaut either on the moon or some planet. But let me play you a little bit of it. It gives me the creeps just to listen to it. It's called Black Star. And it actually shows what looks like a black planet or a black planet blocking the sun's rays as it's heading towards the Earth. But listen to this music and tell me it doesn't give you the creeps. Listen to this. It is quite disturbing, the visuals that you see while listening to this song. Listen to this. In fact, it shows a girl kneeling before a dead astronaut. Behind her is the dark star. She obviously is on the moon, and when she lifts the visor of the helmet, there is a dead astronaut. I believe it's supposed to be Major Tom. I don't know. And then everybody who is in the video is quivering and shaking as if that they are under some spell. Whether they're like zombies or something, but they have the skull of Major Tom, and this woman is carrying it. Looking behind her, she looks like she's in some Egyptian city or some ruinous city. But it certainly is telling that metaphor and that story. And boy, is the blind prophet telling the story. And these people are all being affected by the dark sun and the movements of the sun, which... And it all seems to come together in some strange metaphor. Children of the Sun, the song Children of the Sun is also about childhood's end. After the Gold Rush, a song by Neil Young about childhood's end, about the idea of the coming of the overlords from space, coming from a darker area of the planet, how they reveal themselves to all of us, how they take the children away. How they leave the old ones to fend for themselves on the planet. How the children are taken to a new home, to a new cradle somewhere. This metaphor is about the dark star, about the Death Star, about the coming of the overlords, the ones who, or the Anunnaki, the ones who we said would return from the dark planet to take us away. So who knows why this is being part of the zeitgeist of the moment, but it certainly affected me when I first saw the story of the Planet X, because I was thinking, why is Planet X now a story? Why is it coming back into the zeitgeist? Why are we getting this with the idea of the darker star, the nemesis, the binary nemesis, and with the Death Star, Star Wars, and now Black Star by David Bowie, which I would recommend. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page. It's not for people who aren't, let's just say this. If you're easily disturbed, and there's nothing pornographic in it, there's nothing bloody or gory in it, but it's disturbing. And Bowie, if you ever thought he was an alien then, he looks like an alien now, more so than ever before. He looks like he's some strange white, it's like beyond the White Duke look. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. Darker eyes, just looking like he's been touched by something, and he's just staring off into space. He's wearing he looks like a blind prophet. He's holding up a Bible with a black star on it, looking up into the sky. Everybody's waiting for the return of the black star. It's a metaphor, and it's a meme. It's being pushed in the media for some reason, and I don't know. I look at these things, I see them. There's got to be a reason why this is going to be presented, why this is being presented, the timing of all this. I see the patterns, and I hope you see them too. What are your thoughts? I just want to get your thoughts on this. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. The idea of Planet X, or the idea of the nemesis returning, the binary system returning, the metaphor of the dark or Death Star returning, these are things that are becoming part of our zeitgeist now. They're being pushed into the meme category so that everybody's thinking about this. It's like a programming technique they're putting in the media. And just thought I would show you this. You know, I love the fact that my listeners pay a lot of attention to things around them, and they give me all kinds of things to talk about and to bring up, especially now that we've gone 5 hours instead of the three. And that's really appreciative because, you know, it makes my mind work and it makes for a better show. So, you know, we have that many listeners who are very attentive, cogent, and especially at this time of night. I'm very proud to say that, you know, it makes for great conversation and a lot of great people out there listening to the program. I very much appreciate this. And which, by the way, I want to invite you all to go to your Amazon page. Riding the Shockwave is my new book. It'd make a great Christmas gift if anybody out there is a fan of Ground Zero. It's good reading. It can take your mind off a lot of things and get you thinking about a few things as well. Also, we have a book on Lulu, lulu.com. You can purchase my UFO disclosure book. It has also my first investigative report into a very important UFO case in Tracy, California. It ended up being a topic on UFO Hunters. So Bill Burns, of course, headed up that. He said he wanted to do some interviews. He couldn't get me out to San Francisco to talk about it, or Tracy, California, to talk about it. So Olaf Phillips, who is, of course, a colleague and also the publisher of my books, he was there to talk about the Tracy case. But as far as UFOs those things are concerned, we have this new book, Disclosure, that's on the lulu.com site and also amazon.com with Riding the Shockwave. Speaking of earlier when I was talking about the listeners and their contributions to the show, somebody reminded me, and I remember this too, because Liam is a big fan of Scooby-Doo. And he watches Scooby-Doo religiously, and I don't know what it is, maybe it's my influence or whatever, but he used to sit down and watch Scooby-Doo. And somebody said, remember the Scooby-Doo episode where they talked about Nibiru? And I figured, yeah, I remember that, and I have the recording of it right here, and I'm going to play it for everybody. Scooby-Doo and all the crew of the Dream Machine, Fred, I guess, has this missing piece of some tablet that talks about the ancient Sumerians. And when his parents ask him what he's doing with the disc, he says he's putting it away for safekeeping because they have to go investigate a goat man that's terrorizing children. Krampus, of course. And so here's that clip. You'll find it very chilling and very timely tonight as we're talking about Planet X. We're talking about, we talked about Krampus 2 weeks ago. Listen to this.
Hey there, son.
What are you doing, dear?
Yeah, what's in the
briefcase?
Glad you asked. Mom, Dad, I've got something important to say. Since you've come back into my life, I finally feel for the first time ever that I can trust adults.
Oh, Fred.
We're glad you feel that way, son. And because of that, if anything should happen to me or the gang, I want you to have what's in this briefcase.
We could take it right now.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm going to put it in the mystery machine for now so I can keep a close eye on it. The gang and I are checking out some weird goat guy who's terrorizing kids. You know duty. It calls. It's so great having you both in my life again.
Keep your tripwire taut.
And your tensile line strong.
Ricky, it's Brad.
And Judy.
Go ahead, you two.
Tell Professor Pericles the rest of the planispheric disc
is ours for the taking.
Something's been bugging me about our little underwater escapade.
There's a lot about that adventure I wish we could forget.
Amen to that.
But the weirdest part of all was what the late Abigail Gluck whispered.
Like I'll say, a crazy mummified corpse whispering Nibiru is creepy times 10.
It gets creepier. I googled it and found a lot. Namely this. Nibiru is a planet listed in the writings of Zachariah Sitchin, particularly his book The Twelfth Planet. According to Sitchin's interpretation of Babylonian religious texts, a giant planet called Nibiru passes by Earth every 3,600 years and allows its sentient inhabitants to interact with humanity. These beings, which Sitchin identified with the Anunnaki of Sumerian myth, would become humanity's first gods. My favorite internet encyclopedia says there's supposed to be a collision. The Nibiru collision is a disastrous encounter between the Earth and a large planetary object. Believers in this doomsday event usually refer to this object as Planet X, or Nibiru.
Doomsday event?
Doomsday event. 888-673. I love Scooby-Doo. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Let's go to Bob in Pennsylvania. Hi, Bob. You're on Ground Zero.
How you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great.
I listen to you a lot. I like your show and George Story. You guys have a lot of insight on things that adults like to hear about, because I believe we should have a lot of disclosure on things. But I believe in Planet X and the Nibiru, and that we weren't told properly about, you know, our religious brains about, you know, creation and stuff. So I'm just telling you, I believe in Planet X, and I think there's a anything in the Planet X, there's a gravitational pull as it would go by.
Mm-hmm. It would definitely have a pull. It'd pull on the magnetosphere, definitely. And, you know, these are the things that we're seeing magnetic shifting, literally. And people wonder why. And, you know, I know that the sun shifts. I know the poles are known to shift. But maybe this is heralding something like a Planet X arrival or something like that.
I definitely believe that. And we miss a lot of things coming from the sun's direction, like meteorites and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have more satellites or sensors out there towards the sun, because we missed the last meteorite that hit in Russia, you know.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, we, as I said earlier, we are having more events with huge fireballs and loud thunderous sounds that aren't thunder, but definitely booms in the sky and everything. And people, you know, are reporting these things in great numbers. And it just reminds us that we're like a pebble going through an ocean full of rocks and other debris. And it's a wonder we don't see more of it.
Yeah, we're very vulnerable. I think we ought to spend more money on things that are coming from the sun's direction that we can't see.
Right.
And I think Planet X comes from that way, too.
Well, it's hiding behind. That's what Marshall Masters said. He said it's hiding behind the sun now. And, of course, when this report came out, they were saying, yeah, this one's behind the sun and this one's near, basically saying that we're more than just a binary system. We have a number of planets that may fit the bill of Planet X that are out there somewhere. And it all goes back to that theory that maybe there are free-floating planets out there that were flung outside of our solar system that we don't see, that simply have these erratic orbits and wobbles that one day we'll be surprised to have it next to us or coming at us. And that would be really creepy, because everybody believes that everything is so uniform and so tightly fitted and compact for our solar system, when in reality there are anomalies out there that could surprise us any day or any time. And I think people need to be more open to the idea that space has got a lot more secrets than we know.
Absolutely. It's so vast out there.
Yes.
I appreciate talking on your show, Clyde.
And thank you, Bob. Thank you for being there. Thank you so much for listening tonight. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Howard. Let's go to Howard, Washington. Hi, Howard. You're on Ground Zero.
Hello, Clyde. I see they've got you working the late night shift again here.
Yeah, Art's gone. So, we're doing late night again. So, go ahead.
Well, you and Marshall, I was listening to your conversation about Nibiru and the Anunnaki and such. It just brought to mind a program, one of the new episodes of Ancient Aliens I watched just last night.
Uh-huh.
It shook me to the core. They were showing the ISIS people in northern Iraq destroying the Sumerian statues and monuments and so forth. They were going at, you know, the big winged lions and the wall reliefs and all of that. They were going after them with sledgehammers and jackhammers.
Uh-huh.
They leveled the whole city of Nineveh. You know, they wired it with explosives and just reduced it to rubble. It's just sickening. But what comes to mind is, you know, why those things stood there for what, 5,000 years. You know,
mm-hmm.
Why there and why now? It is curious why they would be impelled to do that.
Well, I've always wondered, I've always theorized the reason why they do this is because they want to rewrite history. And so the way they do it is they eliminate all of the ancient history and they rewrite it to fit them. And I think that maybe we attempt to do that. Even Hitler attempted to do that many times. When they went in, what are the first things they go after? What's in the museums? What they have hidden in the museums, and they try to take the art or the gold or whatever, and those are the spoils of war. But in reality, if you remove these things and destroy them, you're destroying history. And then the ones in power who've destroyed the historic relics can make up new histories if they want to.
True. They're sure doing a good job of it. I had one other comment to make. You were discussing the odd weather we've been having lately. You know, they've been telling us that it's an El Nino. I would like to say that what we're experiencing is a very rare meteorological phenomenon, and it's called Al Gornio.
Yes, that works. Right. Howard, thank you for that, Howard. Yeah, you know, I had somebody point out to me, well, maybe the warm weather on the East Coast is El Nino. No, El Nino affects the West Coast. Eventually, it may affect the East, but not like that. I can't explain how we can have a storm systems like this. I mean, the rain is normal for Portland, I believe. I mean, we had a lot of catching up to do from the summer. The flooding is unprecedented. We don't like the flooding. We don't like the problem. But, I mean, hey, cleaning the grates helps, you know. If somebody would go out and clean the grates so the water can flow into the storm drains. But that doesn't seem to happen. I don't know why. We just love to be driving around in big, big lakes of water. Anyway, enough complaining. Let's go to James in Alabama. Hi, James. You're on Ground Zero.
Hey, Clyde. How you doing?
Doing good, man.
Hey, my question for you was, I was listening to Coast to Coast the other night, and they had a subject on there talking about NASA and all the technology that they had not disclosed yet
mm-hmm.
and released to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, you know, been other conspiracies about, you know, distant planets that could sustain life like Earth.
Yeah.
And if we are in a doomsday event like Planet X that would completely destroy Earth,
uh-huh.
do you think that NASA might have that kind of technology where we could actually get to another planet?
Well, all the systems point to yes at the moment. Probably because of the fact that there have been many people. There's even something called the Secret Space Summit, where a number of people get together and discuss what is called the Secret Space Program, where NASA has its it has its face that it puts on for the general public, but in reality, the military has secretly conducted and created secret space trips, and they have off-world type of military garrisons. They have space weapons.
They even may have created mining settlements or other settlements on Mars or the moon or even on asteroids. And this would be the reason why they put forth that new bill they wanted to turn into law about businesses on Mars or businesses elsewhere. It's basically to keep up with the idea that maybe back in the 1950s, as far back in the 1950s, they were planning on joint missions to Mars, joint missions to the moon, and they may have already set up camps up there. Now, I don't know if that's true. It's a fascinating topic that I've touched on many times. There are a lot of things that are pointing to that idea because many people who I respect who are journalists have also theorized that this has happened. And with the sudden boom in what I'd call private, I don't know if it's private, it'd be more like corporate rockets being made, anything from Elon Musk with the Tesla company's rocket to Jeff Bezos' Amazon's rocket, where he is... pretty much shown us a rocket that can go up into space and then land again without a splashdown. I think these are some remarkable feats done by corporate entities. And I always thought that the next quest for space would be done by corporate entities because NASA's got too many things it's doing behind the scenes.
Right. And with that being said, you know, even if there was like another planet that could sustain life on Earth, there's no way, you know, given the timeline that we would actually be able to build something that way and who all would get to actually go on that? I mean, chances are people like us wouldn't make it, and then they would take, you know, certain people.
Probably take certain people. You'd probably have to have a certain type of genetic code. You'd probably have to have certain types of education, that sort of thing. Maybe being a biologist. So, you know, have you seen the movie The Martian?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've been wanting to go see it.
Well, one of the criteria for the astronaut that basically survived or attempted to survive on that planet was that he was a botanist, and he knew how to survive by growing foods on the planet Mars. And I won't go into detail on how he did it, but it seems to be something to think about because of the fact that they would have to have certain minds and sciences to establish either a government or at least a scientific approach to surviving on a planet like Mars or any other planet that may be habitable or we could make habitable. All we need to do is to do some terraforming and then some atmosphere forming, and we do that on Earth all the time. We do things to create more oxygen, like we plant trees and we do all kinds of other things. I mean, we do bad things too with the geoengineering process. But if we geoengineer things like, I don't know if you'd call it geoengineering on Mars, but if we do, you know, engineering on the Mars surface, engineering in the atmosphere, what little atmosphere there is on Mars, maybe even what very little atmosphere there is on the moon, you know, water and all kinds of other things like that, it could possibly ignite building blocks that already exist, amino acids already exist, that could probably rejuvenate life or at least be a breeding ground for it. So it would take a lot of science and a lot of knowledge from these scientists to actually, it'd be like, you know, a bunch of Boy Scouts first learning how to start a fire with sticks or with flint and steel. We'd have to have that kind of simple knowledge to get civilization sparked on a planet that wouldn't normally be inhabited by anybody because of the the situation there is so harsh.
Right. All right. Well, I appreciate all that. And if it ever does come to that, I'm just a truck driver, so I'll just put my bid in for it. Maybe I'll get lucky.
Yeah, maybe you'll end up driving. That's the thing. You just think about it. They'll need, I guess you could call them bus, quote, drivers, getting on the space bus and flying people on the space bus to Mars. So maybe we need people. I mean, it probably isn't that much of a stretch from driving a truck to driving a space bus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I appreciate it, and I enjoy listening.
Oh, thank you so much for calling in, James. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I had a friend of mine who was a pilot, and I told him, I said, you know, being a pilot's cool. And he looked at me, no. He says, it's just like driving a bus. I thought, but it's a bus with wings that flies 600 miles an hour. You know, so, and he goes, no. He says, it's just like taking a bus for the spin. He says, those astronauts, you know, they're just like bus drivers. They go up into space, and then, you know, they take a bus literally for a drive, you know, around the planet a couple of times. They're about 500 miles out there. And he says, it's just like, you know, taking a bus out of the garage and parking in the spaceport. I'm like going, man, you just simplified it for me. You know, you have the training, you know what you're doing. You know, it'd be like, you know, driving a car. It'd be like, you know, driving a bus or, you know, I see the guys who drive the trains here in Portland. You know, they just kick back and honk the horn if somebody's in their way, or they, you know, they just, you know, just keep going straight, or they curve for a while, they slow down, and once you get the hang of it, it may be routine. So yes, these space missions are not too far away, and quite frankly, I'm excited for them. I don't know if I have the guts to leave the planet. I mean, unless they find it's really safe to do it, I don't know.
Welcome in peace.
It is a celestial rock.
Awakening.
In space, if you will. Dirk, what is it?
Well, that's interesting. No, that can't be Saturn unless there's an eclipse going on. No, because you don't see Saturn as with a chunk taken out of it.
We found something out here. Something only you might understand.
Scientists claim they have found the elusive planet X.
Oh my God. We have come to take what is ours.
I spent 20 years trying to get us ready for this. We used their technology to strengthen our planet. But it won't be enough.
Them in my dreams.
They're coming back.
Don't make us destroy you.
Scientists say they have found the elusive planet X, or Nibiru, or dwarf star, or planet 7X. Doubting astronomers are in an uproar. Planet X, Nibiru. Is it a myth or a mystery?
I'm Clyde Lewis. This is Ground Zero. The number is to call 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. The programming has begun. Planet X in the mainstream news. Two candidates discovered in Chile. Many scientists want to debunk it. Others are trying to figure out just exactly what it is, peer review. Is this a sign that the overlords or the Anunnaki are coming back? Childhood's End starts on the Sci-Fi Channel talking about these overlords coming back to claim the planet and what is theirs. Star Wars will be in theaters discussing an idea that we've talked about as well. David Bowie has a new song that is a preview to his new album called Black Star. The video has been posted on my Facebook page. All of these memes, these triggers about Planet X, about the Death Star, about just all of it makes you wonder about what this all foreshadowing is about. 888-673-3700. Let's go to Preston calling from Indiana. Hi, Preston. You're on Ground Zero.
Hey, Clyde. I'm going to get to the point, but first, but I want to pay you a very high compliment, okay?
Okay, sure.
I am a thinker, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there are two people in my life that really get me to think. One was my dad, and he passed last March 31st, and the second is you. So I appreciate you so much more than my dad is gone, because you make me think about things, Clyde, and I love you, and I thank you for that, okay?
Thank you, buddy. I love you, too. Thank you for tuning in. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay, real quick. I want you to do something when you get opportunity. I want you to go on YouTube.
Okay.
Okay? And I want you to look up the old 80s cartoon Thunder the Barbarian.
Okay.
And look at the intro. Now, keep in mind, this cartoon aired it debuted in 1980, okay?
Okay.
And as we both know, Clyde, there's no such thing as coincidence. So when you say things that make my jaw drop, hopefully when you look at that intro, the Thunder Barbarian, your jaw would drop. But, okay, let me get to my main point. I've followed and I've studied a lot of Zachariah Sitchin's research.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was real clear about certain things, like the orbit of Nibiru and the time period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we know throughout history, comets, plural, have been known as harbingers of doom, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, we know, I guess about a year and a half ago, Comet Ison came through, right?
Yes.
And what really got overlooked was the fact that Comet Ison had a 3,600-year orbit. And when you looked at the trajectory of that comet through our solar system, it, like, identically matched some of the trajectories that Zachariah Sitchin had said about Nibiru, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, with that said, you know how I use the term comets, plural?
Sure.
What if throughout time that the comets that have been the harbingers of doom, what if it was Comet Ison all this time instead of, and you through different time periods, you think you're seeing a different comet, but it's the same comet?
Well, you know, actually, it's funny you bring that up. I actually, a long time ago when Ison was big, I wrote a story about, oh gosh, like you say, a revolving comet that always showed up. And in fact, I had, believe it or not, I had an old carving from a German book, and this is like in the 1800s, that showed a whole, it looked like a squadron of comets, I guess. You could, without a herd, I don't know if comets come in herds, but it showed like three or four spheres, all with tails, and this was said to be a reported incident, and people were curious if this was a group of planets that were free-floating going through space or comets or whatever, because it was just amazing to see that there was four or six. I can't remember. I'd have to go back and dig through my notes. But they show these four or six spheres coming through the sky, and I just thought, wow, you know, when did they see this? And it was a German book, 1800s or maybe even earlier than that, maybe 1700s, where they have it carved on the cover of the book, and then there was like these German words that described what they were seeing, and it was like these spheres. And, you know, back then, I'm sure they didn't think extraterrestrials or whatever, but they were thinking, what are these things, and why are they in the sky, and why are they hovering over our city? And and so it makes you wonder if, A, it was a group of, you know, extraterrestrials hovering over the city in these spheres, or if there was like a whole group of them that continually, you know, like Ison, continually go around and around and around, like you said. And it is quite possibly a Planet X contender. But then we heard, what, that Ison broke apart in its last pass around the sun? Did I get that? Or did it die later it was...
There's a lot of things, don't they?
Yeah, well, I always remember that. If this is what I thought, Ison, allegedly, they lost track of it.
They lost track of it, and that's the last we heard of it.
Yeah, and then for 3 days they said it was dead. And then they said, oh, we saw it again. I'm thinking, ooh, that's kind of bizarre for a metaphor. Ison dies, gone for 3 days, and then comes back again. Kind of like a Jesus right. metaphor. I thought that's kind of bizarre. Right. Yeah, go ahead.
One more point. This is real quick. Out of everything that Zachariah Sitchin said, the thing that I found most interesting was he said that in terms of the Anunnaki, right, they had a limited window to come to Earth, meaning that they always got here before Nibiru got here as it made its pass, and then they had to catch it on the way out.
Right.
So if you want to look for anything, if you want to know that Nibiru is real, okay, when we start seeing aliens coming down, that might be a good sign.
Now, yeah, that's a big yes.
And here's the thing. Yeah. You know, Jesus said, right, uh-huh. mm-hmm. and this is overlooked when his disciples asked about his return and everything, right?
Right.
He said, as in the days of Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you remember the days of Noah, there's a lot of crazy you-know-what going on.
Called the
you
Nephilim. I mean? The Nephilim came down in the days of Noah.
Exactly. And that, more than anything, you know, when I see 20-footers walking around, I'm like, okay, Zachariah Sitchin is probably smiling his grave right now. Clive, like I said, man, I love you so much, man, and God is with you for what you do. And
oh, thank you.
I appreciate you so much.
All right, appreciate you, buddy. You keep calling, all right?
I definitely will. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye. It's See, we've got enough time. Let's go to Angel quickly. Angel in Oregon, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to say, Glenn, that I heard you say we only got a little time, but here's the deal. People need to understand this. You know, the Bible talks about doctrines of devils. And I believe that what all of these myths and mythologies and all this Eastern mysticism and all this mess creates, what it does, it creates an environment of error for people to think that somehow there is either life somewhere else in some other planet that we're going to be visited by aliens.
Is that why, Angel, is that why Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions? Is that why he said that?
No, sir.
Oh, that's demonic? Is that what you're trying to tell me? That Jesus said mansions that his Father occupies, meaning many planets and many places and dimensions?
No, sir. That's error.
No, it's not error. That's in the book of John. It's in the book of John, Angel. Check it out, buddy. It's in the book of John.
I did.
Yeah?
Look at mansions, Glenn. It does not mean
that. My name's Clyde, not Glenn.
It means rooms. It does not mean that.
No, it does not mean rooms. Are you kidding me? In my he lives in a house with many rooms? Is that what you're trying to tell me? It's literal?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what
it means. Oh, that's nonsense.
In my Father's house.
Yeah, my Father's house are many mansions, meaning metaphorically, not living in a big mansion somewhere in L.A. What's that?
Okay, so you believe that there's actually life in other planets because of one scripture?
Okay, stop for 1 minute. I got to ask you one question, okay? Where does God live? Where does God live, in your opinion, besides your heart? Where does he live?
You know what? I believe he lives and resides in the third heaven.
Okay, where is heaven at, Angel? Can you tell me where heaven is?
Well, it all depends. You got the heaven right here where we see the stars and the clouds.
Right.
And then you have the next heaven where you have the universe and the planets.
Okay.
So if God
lives in the universe and the planets and the stars, what does that make God, Angel?
What do you mean? It makes him...
An extraterrestrial, does it not? Because he doesn't live on planet Earth. He lives extraterrestrially off-planet. It makes him an extraterrestrial, doesn't it?
God
is an extraterrestrial, is he not?
God is a spirit.
He's an extraterrestrial. He created this planet apart from the planet, and he's an extraterrestrial.
Are you telling me that Christians are extraterrestrial?
No, I never said Christians are extraterrestrial. We live on this planet, but there are spirits and angels and everybody that lives off planet. That makes them extraterrestrial, doesn't it?
But what did God do, Glenn? He came in the person of the Son, Jesus Christ. That tells you that God resides in the third heaven.
And what did Jesus also say, Angel? He says, I am not of this earth. Jesus said, I am not of this earth, is what he said. I am not of this earth. What does that mean?
Let me see. He lived on the earth. The Bible says that he didn't have a place to lay his head. So you tell me, he grew up on earth. He was raised by his parents. See, you don't understand the Bible because you're trying to understand it, Carl. Carnally minded, and you're taking...
You are from below, I am from above, you are of this world, I am not of this world. Jesus said that in the book of John.
Given to us, sir, as a chief cornerstone, he was talking...
You are from below, I am from above, you are of this world, I am not of this world. Jesus said that he is not of this world.
Do you remember when Jesus was asked if he was a king?
Jesus was the Son of God. He was God incarnate, and he was also part man. He was man God.
Remember when Jesus...
He was like Mr. Spock in Star Trek. The needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many, and that's why he crucified himself on that Star Trek planet.
And you're quoting scripture out of context, my
No, I'm not. I'm being ridiculous because you're being ridiculous. I mean, you are the most ridiculous caller I've ever had.
You're trying to argue that that God has other planets.
No, he does. He has plenty of planets. He made at least 9, from what I understand, and we only use one of them.
He does not have life on no other planet.
You don't know that.
Nonsense.
You don't know. Look, obviously God has not put intelligent life in you, so why am I arguing with you? What's that?
A spirit, a soul, and a body. Stop the nonsense. There is no other life in no other planet.
No, obviously there is no other life. There's just a waste of space out there.
Demons.
God needed all that space to make one planet so they can all be happily ever after in his nice little sponge-painted world looking like Barry Gibb and worshiping him till we die. What?
Just like he decided one son would be the savior of the world.
One son. I know, he did.
Mr. Glenn.
He did. And my name is not Glenn. My name is Clyde. C-L-Y-D-E. Clyde Lewis the 13th. What?
There's only one savior, Mr. Glenn. Not three or four saviors. If God wanted one planet to house his creation, which is you and I,
yeah,
then so be it.
Okay, so
it requires...
Okay, Mr. Devil.
It requires...
His name was Angel, right? So he calls me Glenn. I'll call him Devil. Is that what we'll do?
No, I never called you no devil.
You call me Glenn. My name is Clyde, not Glenn. Clyde, C L Y D E. Clyde.
Sir,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean no disrespect.
Okay. Well,
all I'm saying to you is, sir, that it, you have your opinion, I have mine. This is just a show that I enjoy as I travel.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling you. I've given you scriptures.
That I'm entitled to my opinion.
I've given you scriptures, like you, Glenn, are. And this is what you've given me. And you're arguing, say that I'm wrong. I'm just saying, I'm giving your own Bible back to you.
No. I didn't say you were wrong.
Oh.
I said that you were interpreting scripture out of context.
I'm really not.
To try to prove your point.
John 8:23. Try it. It's really cool. I love that.
John 8:23.
Yeah, John 8:23. New Testament, John. Apostle.
John
disciple.
8:23.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. Have a good night. Planet X. What's the deal? NASA says, it ain't real. Look up in the sky. We're all gonna die walking in Nibiru Wonderland. Earth is doomed. Are you listening? Now the atmosphere, it's missing. You know we were right. The government lied. Walking in Nibiru Wonderland. Now you know that we are really doomed, man. Even though they say that we're okay. Does it really matter if we're doomed, man? Just max your credit cards and do not pay. Later on, we'll perspire as we burn in the hellfire. All the plans that we made can be thrown away. Walking in Nibiru Wonderland. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We're back. How much time do we have? We have about. Oh, okay. Thank you all for. You know, we've had so much fun now that we're 5 hours, and I'm very glad that we're here. And I thank you all for listening. And tomorrow night, hopefully, another great show for everybody. And thank you all tonight that called in. Great show. Everybody who's calling to the program has great stuff to add. And. Only, though, if you call me Glenn, I will pull my hair out again. So don't call me Glenn. If so, now watch. Everybody's going to call me Glenn. Okay. Anyway, thank you all for being a part of this 5-hour show. We'll see you tomorrow night on Ground Zero. Good night.